The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
What's going on, y'all? This is Brandon Tatum. I just want to thank you so much for listening to my podcast. You can always get the podcast at Salem Podcast Network or wherever you listen to your podcast.
Watch this. This.
Portions of the following program may contain pre-recorded material.
As you enjoy Thanksgiving weekend with your family and friends, please remember my annual campaign for Prison Fellowship's Angel Tree. For just $25, you can bless a child who has a mom or a dad in prison with a personalized Christmas gift and the gospel. Or $125 will bless 5 kids who should not have to suffer because of their parents' misdeeds. Please go to theofficertatum.com, click on the Angel Tree banner, and be as generous as you can. Thank you. And again, happy Thanksgiving weekend. You are listening to the best of the Officer Tatum Show.
Brandon Tatum is a 7-year veteran of the Tucson Police Department. He's a YouTube sensation with 1.9 million subscribers. He started Blexit with Candace Owens, and now he's tackling his biggest assignment yet. This is the Officer Tatum Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen, ladies, welcome back to the Officer Tatum Show for another day. It's Friday. I hope you guys are having a good end to your week. I want to give a shout out to all the first responders who are out there hustling, doing the best that they can to make this thing work, making sure the public is safe. Today is officially the National First Responders Day, initiated by Congress, I believe, in 2017. And it is to support law enforcement, firefighters, and other emergency service personnel that are the first to the scene. And I want to give a special shout out to my father, Mr. Bobby Tatum, who is a fire chief with Keller Fire Department. He retired as a fire chief from Waco and also retired as a battalion chief from Fort Worth, the fire department. And I want to give a shout out to all my brothers that I work with at the Tucson Police Department, everybody I was on the SWAT team with. I want to say thank you for your service, because it takes a strong-willed person to go out, put their lives on the line, risk their future, leave their families behind to go and serve and protect perfect strangers. Even in the face of hatred, murder, you name it, and people have no idea the stuff that first responders see. Even with all of that, there's still men and women that go out and they put their lives on the line without hesitation. So I want to take this second to thank all the first responders, and I'm going to give a moment of silence for those who have lost their lives in the line of duty doing what's right. And I'm just going to start it right now, and we'll go for a few seconds and then I'll continue. So if you guys can join me in a moment of silence. All right, everybody out there, thank you for your service. I have a special guest that's going to join me. I've been wanting this brother to join me for a very long time. It is very unique to hear a perspective from policing, our perspective of policing, from another man who happens to be an American of African descent. I'm going to give his bio, and then I'm going to bring him in. Deion Joseph, I think a lot of people know him. I think he had a viral video when he challenged LeBron James to have a conversation, not in a threatening manner, but to have a conversation because of the ill rhetoric that was coming out of the mouths of the ignorant LeBron James. I don't know if he's an ignorant person overall, but his statements were definitely ignorant. This brother's law enforcement consultant, speaker, and active police officer serving the Skid Row community in Los Angeles. He's the author of the book Stepping Across the Lines, A Skid Row Cop Story, Volume 1. Deion has been a police officer for over 25 years. 23 of those 25 years, he's been serving the community and the citizens that have been forgotten at Skid Row. So without further ado, help me welcome Deion Joseph to the Officer Tatum Show.
Hey, how's it going, Brandon?
It's going good. It's going good, man. It's my pleasure. You're looking good. I definitely wouldn't want to get arrested by you. So, but I'll start with just a few questions, man. I want to know a little bit about your background, and I want our audience to hear. How did you become a police officer? Like, what inspired you? What was the tipping point? Have you always wanted to be a cop, or was it some phenomenon later in life?
Absolutely not. I hated police officers with a passion as a young African-American male, like many. I was indoctrinated to hate and fear law enforcement. From my friends, from an activist group I joined in high school, also the music I listened to, KRS-One, NWA, Public Enemy, yes, F the Police was playing in my 89 Nissan Sentra. So I was heavily influenced by that. But then also I was racially profiled a couple of times, which it can happen, but I don't believe in painting officers with a broad brush. Now I don't. But a couple of things, and then the Rodney King incident hit. Didn't leave a good taste in my mouth. But then I ended up out of a job for several months, and I put in applications for many jobs, but nobody would call me. So I had an uncle who was a cop and another friend who says, hey, they're looking for black officers for this department. I was like, that department? Oh, hell no. But then I put my name in the hat. And out of all the jobs I put in for, that was the one that called me. And it's been a blessing to my life. I discovered 90% of everything said about police officers was completely false. I wasn't being taught to hate my people. I wasn't being taught that black people are targets. In fact, I learned more Spanish and human relations than how to keep my head from being blown off in the streets. And was surprised at how I was able to articulate the black community's feelings without any ramifications. It was a very eye-opening time for me. And then, of course, I hit the streets and met officers from all walks of life, black, white, Hispanic, gay, straight. They were just all, for the most part, wonderful human beings. They were the honorable rule. There's a negative exception to the honorable rule. I happen to work with the honorable rule.
Man, that is wonderful, Dion. You know, it's funny. We have a very similar perspective. Nick, you turn that down when I talk. We have a very similar perspective. You know, I never wanted to be a police officer. I got arrested at 8 years old for smoking marijuana in a vacant house, and that was my first interaction with police. And they pulled guns on us and everything, but, of course, they didn't know we were 8 years old. They got a call that we were breaking into a house. It was about seven of us, and that was my first interaction. But then when I became a police officer, because of the circumstances that I had gone through, I realized that people have no idea. I didn't have any idea of what police officers were doing and how they would operate. Right. I've never met a racist cop. I've met cops that are racially insensitive, and I can't blame them. You know, if you never grew up in the neighborhood, you probably don't know how to interact. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I want you to continue your career. And, like, what is your favorite part about being a cop, and what's your least favorite part about being a cop?
My favorite part of being a police officer is being able to go out there and break down the stereotypes of what a police officer is. As you know, most police officers are combating crime from a deficit as far as perception is concerned. So I feel like the way that I go out there and police people from a place of love, show them love from a place that they were indoctrinated, like myself, not to expect it, and watching those bridges start to build and those walls start crumbling down, and I'm making those heart connections with the people on top of them learning that when I aggressively enforce crime, it's not to hurt them, it's because I'm trying to help them. And that only comes from building those bridges. That's what I love. What I hate now is the politics. Politics is destroying everything, whether it's the school system, the justice system. The politics of the job has completely robbed me of my joy and even my ability to keep people in Skid Row and other places, and I'm sure other cops are feeling the same way, as safe as I know we're supposed to be because they bought into this false narrative that the whole system is racist. And I personally don't believe that. Do I believe there's racist in the system? Absolutely, because anytime you have any profession with human beings in it, there's always going to be a negative exception and somebody's going to let us down. I mean, doctors aren't immune, the military's not immune, education, nobody is immune to having those people in their ranks. But I refuse to believe that the entire system is racist, because you're talking about me. You're talking about my twin brother who's a law enforcement officer. You're talking about many officers from all walks of life who I work with who really care and they love their job. It's just a tough time because, as you know, politicians have turned their back on us, and now they're starting to turn back to us. But it's almost they broke the system to where it's almost irreparable. So no matter what they do, I can arrest the most violent criminal in the world. But if you got no cash bail, Prop 47, 57, and all these crazy laws that really hamstring it, it almost does no good, and it's destroying the morale. So that's what I hate right now, is the politics.
Ladies and gentlemen, you listen to Deion Joseph. You got to go to his website at www.deionjoseph.org or follow him on Twitter, Officer Deion Joseph. I love to hear you speak, man. You're very articulate. You know what you're talking about. Very well experienced. I want to get into the challenge that you made for LeBron James, and I thought it was a very respectful challenge because he seems to be uninformed. I mean, may not be malicious, but he seems to be uninformed. How much time do we got? Because I feel like we're going to run up against the clock. Look like we got about a minute left. So, Deion, just set the precedent, and then we're going to follow up in the next segment. But what actually happened between you or what compelled you to make the video addressed to LeBron James?
Well, initially it was anger when I saw the tweet of him kind of targeting an officer. I'm not saying that he was talking to an officer for violence, but with such a large influence and just knowing the environment we were in, saying things like that could put a target on an officer's back. So it angered me at first, but then I realized that at one point in my life, I was LeBron James. And also, I do believe, in spite of what anybody says, deep down inside, he's a decent human being. I just believe he's being unduly influenced and misled, and he's not allowing himself to see or hear the other side based on his celebrity status. So because of that, I was hoping to have a conversation with him and just humanize each other, you know, and just talk and make him understand that I want to save black people, too. I want to save people. I want to save everybody. But we can't do it the way we're going about it because now more people of color are dying because of this extreme rhetoric that you and so many other people are buying into that's become dangerous.
Perfect, perfect. Deion Joseph, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to come back in the next segment. Y'all hold the phone. We'll continue this conversation on the Austin Tatum Show. You all have helped build MyPillow into the incredible company that it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, inventor and CEO of MyPillow, wants to give back to who? My listeners. Right now, MyPillow is offering exclusive offers on their bed sheets, their six-piece towel sets, and even offering an extended 60-day money-back guarantee. Orders placed now through December the 25th will now have an extended money-back guarantee through March the 1st. The Giza bed sheets are marked down to as low as $29.99. And believe me when I say you will get the best sleep of your life on these. And they asked me, these what, Brandon? These sheets. Their six-piece towel set is made with USA cotton, comes with two bath towels, two hand towels, two washcloths, typically retailing for $89.98, and is now $39.98 with my promo code. There's a limited supply, so make sure you order now. Call 1-800-976-8379, use promo code Brandon, or go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, put in promo code Brandon.
On the Salem News Channel, on the Salem Podcast Network, and right here, right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen, ladies, welcome back to the Officer Tatum Show. I'm your host, Brandon Tatum. Follow me on social media at The Officer Tatum. I have my special guest. I couldn't have found anybody better on the National First Responders Day other than my brother from another mother, Deion Joseph. Deion is a law enforcement consultant, speaker, and active police officer serving the Skid Row community. Y'all know him. His video went viral where he gave a respectful challenge to LeBron James and said, hey, man, let's have a conversation about these policing things because maybe I can inform you and then you can make an informed decision when you go out on your platform. Deion, did LeBron James ever follow up with you on that request?
No. And there was a time where there was some hope, but unfortunately we had pundits on both the sides. I'm not a political person. I can't stand the extreme left or the extreme right. Sometimes that those politics can ruin the potential for bridge building. So we had kind of pundits who were putting out these taglines, black cop slams LeBron, black cop. And I hated to see where they were turning it into putting two black people against each other. And then we also had some people in the media. So, and then we had a union rep after I did an interview on Fox News about this very subject, come on after me and say, oh, LeBron James needs to be arrested. I'm like, for what? He was just expressing himself. He just needs to be educated, you know? But so those two things might have hindered any potential. But the best thing that came out of that was, even though I did not get a chance to meet with LeBron, I did create the conversation, get the conversation going between some police officers and members of the community. And you'll be surprised at how many African-Americans, they can't say it out loud because they don't want to get blacklisted. But everywhere I went in Skid Row, Compton, Watts, or wherever I have family or friends, they were like, Deion, I'm so glad you did that. And it's sad they can't say it out loud, but they were really proud of what happened. And, of course, I had some haters. You know, I had some people calling me a clown, a Sambo, a house nigger, you know, all the names. And what was worse when I had white people doing it, which irks me like nobody's business, when white people are trying to tell me how I'm supposed to think. that just drives me insane. As a black man, you shouldn't, you know, that gave me generational deja vu, because my great-great-grandfather, as a black man, they told him that he couldn't own businesses or he couldn't walk on the sidewalk, and because he chose to run a business in a town where he wasn't supposed to and walk on a sidewalk, a 16-year-old white child killed him. So I wow. thank you for not putting a bullet in my head, but no one's going to tell me as a black man who I can be, what I can speak to, and how I feel. You know, so those are the things that came out of it that were negative. But for the most part, I had a lot of support from people, and it was a blessing. It was a blessing.
That's awesome, Dion. I love that you said that, because I think there's two points there that I want to touch on, and I'll have you explain what blacklisted is. And then also the concept of it's funny to me that if a white person were to tell a black person who would be leaning more left how they should act, how they should behave, they're wrong for doing this, they would call that person a racist. But then if you are on the conservative, or they perceive that you are on the conservative side and you're not on the, you know, the ideology of certain black folks, they will allow that to occur, and that person will not get any pushback. And it's very interesting. But I want you to talk about this concept of blacklisted, because I think a lot of people that haven't grown up in the black community that may not be familiar with you know, the ideologies from young black people that young black people have to face if you come out and say something different from the status quo. So can you explain what it means to be blacklisted by your community? Meaning that when you came out and you made certain statements, a portion of the community called you an Uncle Tom, a coon, and they pretty much, you know, shunned you as a black man.
Well, there is a sect of America. And like I said, I'm not left or right. I'm not trying to knock progressives or conservatives. I'm kind of like right in the middle. But there's a sect of America that truly believes that if you're black and you think outside of a certain box, then you're a traitor to your people. And I get, like I said, I'm getting that more from white folks than I am my own people. Because like I said, on the down low, some of my people are like, Dion, man, that needed to be said. But there are people who really expect African Americans to vote one way, to think one, to live in a monolith. And when you decide as an individual, you find out you're an individual with your own thoughts, and you embrace that, and you stop turning off the TV and what the pundits want you to think and start studying, you start realizing real history, real root causes, and you just say, you know what they're doing is not working. Their prescription for me is not working, but I know my life. I know what I need. This is what works for me. That runs juxtaposed to their overall agenda, which is to exploit black pain and trauma to use us to get in positions of power and completely forget about us. And like I said, I think both sides do it. I'm not just labeling one side or the other, but that's what it's about. They turned us into emotional thinkers, even though I personally believe that African Americans are some of the most intelligent people on the planet. They successfully guided many of us to the thought to be emotional thinkers instead of logical thinkers. And when you start thinking logically, it's so fresh and unique that it's either offensive or the most wonderful thing you've ever heard. So if we could ever get to the other side as a people and say, hey, this perspective is pretty wonderful, let me hear what he has to say before I judge or label him, I think we'll be a better people for it, not just as African Americans, but as a country. We have to stop putting people in a box, because everything that I say, everything that I think, it comes from a place of purity, not hatred. So, yeah, that's what being blacklisted is. When you think outside of the box or what's prescribed for you, that's when you can get figuratively or literally 86 out of the cookout.
That is hilarious. Dion Joseph, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to one of the greatest men in policing with an incredible voice. His bio, I just like to read his bio so you guys, if you're jumping in now, you'll know who I'm talking to. Law enforcement consultant, speaker, and active police officer serving the Skid Row community in Los Angeles. He's the author of the book, Stepping Across the Lines, A Skid Row Cop's Story, Volume 1. So y'all need to go get his book. His website is DionJoseph.org, DionJoseph.org. I want to continue this conversation. Is there hope for the relationship? Because let me say this, I want to set the precedent, because a lot of people are not interacting in the community. They're not a police officer dealing with, you know, communities like Skid Row or communities of color, is like what they like to say. And a lot of people, based on the media, they think that there's no hope, and they think that it's such a damaged relationship between the black community and policing. I mean, what do you think about that? Do you see that? Do you see that there's this damaged, beyond repair relationship between the black community or the communities of color and police? And if you do, do you think it's repairable or do you think it's a lost cause?
You know, prior to the pandemic, I saw hope. See, I'm a black officer working in a black community that was, once again, trained to hate me, but I was able to turn the tide through engaging in what I call grassroots community policing, policing from my heart. And, of course, every now and then I had to be aggressive to separate the wolves from the sheep so the sheep could get better. So prior to the pandemic, I noticed there was this kind of hopeful feeling that we would be able to come together. At the beginning of the pandemic, remember, everybody was locked down. So who was the only people out there? First responders. And I remember driving around at 8 o'clock at night and seeing people, black people, Hispanic people, hanging out the window, clapping and saying, thank you for what you guys are doing. I'm like, man, that's all change right there, in spite of what's going on. And then the George Floyd incident went down. And when that happened, of course, remember, people are trapped in their silos.
Deion, I'm gonna have to hold you right there. We got to go to break. I'm going to get back to you in the next segment, and we'll continue this conversation.
Keeping it real.
Ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen, ladies, welcome back to the Officer Tatum Show. I just want to say thank you to all the first responders out there putting their lives on the line for the public. Whether they thank you or not, it is a calling from God, and I appreciate you taking that call. Today, if you don't know, it's officially the National First Responders Day. And in respect for First Responders Day, I'm having a first responder on, an incredible man. We're going to talk for the entire hour, and then I'm going to get into the political minutia that we know of that's going on in our country. There's so much crazy stuff to talk about, and we will talk about it in the next hour. But right now, I want to welcome back my guest, Deion Joseph, law enforcement consultant, speaker, and active police officer serving the Skid Row community in Los Angeles. He has a book that he has written called Stepping Across the Line, a Skid Row Cop's Story, Volume 1. Y'all need to go to his website, DeionJoseph.org, DeionJoseph.org. Go get his book. Follow him on Twitter, Officer Deion Joseph. All right, Deion, welcome back to the Officer Tatum Show. I want to finish the conversation we were having. It was about 2020. You were saying the when you were, you know, it was just the police and the community out in the road. And this was when you had hope that there would be a reconciliation between law enforcement and the public. And then, you know, you kind of alluded to the George Floyd situation. So I'll let you continue and pick it up from there.
So what happened after the George Floyd incident? We had people who were still on lockdown, and all they were being fed through the media, unfortunately, even our journalists, and it's been happening for a long time. Some, not all, became activated. So they were all looking for ratings. They were all looking for sponsors. So they went to every corner of the country to find any negative police contact or perceived negative police contact. And they kept showing it over and over. And, of course, social media, you got some poor kid in his mom's basement smoking weed, switching between cop block and newborn, right? And all they're seeing is a constant montage of police officers, a negative exception of police officers, or incidents where cops were justified, but it's being skewed as if the officers were wrong. And what happens is those same people that were clapping now after the George Floyd incident were the same people we saw throwing rocks and bottles at us. Literally, we had one lady who was a part of our police advisory board who quit the advisory board after watching what happened in Minnesota, something that had nothing to do with us. See, she knew that I house 150 homeless people. She knew that I've sheltered hundreds. She knew that. She knew that I had a program called Ladies Night to empower homeless women in Skid Row and mentor kids. But it didn't matter because she got that steady indoctrination, that steady diet. And she came out, and she was one of the people on the front lines giving us the finger, yelling. And it was a really hurtful time. And what happens now that we're coming out of the pandemic, everybody is now like a walking raw nerve ending, you know? So people are ultra sensitive. People have been divided, Republican versus Democrat, black versus the police, black versus white. Every movement needs an enemy. And, of course, BLM, Antifa chose the police. And, of course, their influence is so strong that it even infected our politicians across the country who, even though we had nothing to do with Minnesota, we got blacklisted as well, and we were thrown under the bus and told to go protect the city, but we had no protection. So as a result, the morale of officers went down. People's perceptions of police officers got worse. But now, since the defund movement, now we're in the refund era because they realized what a horrible and dangerous and reckless idea that was. So now they're refunding the police department, but it's not enough because you have officers who are still emotionally wounded. We had officers who quit with 10 years still left on their before they retire. We had officers, we can't even hire cops right now, especially cops of color, because in our college campuses, they're still pushing that indoctrination. In our high schools, I mean, imagine you're going to school for criminal justice and you get brainwashed so badly against police officers that now you're a political arsonist. I have proof of that. I had a college student who wanted to be a police officer. And she told me, man, I had dreams of being a cop. But what happened was her college professor in her criminal justice class said, here's a project for you. I want you to study and do a report on 150 of the most egregious police acts that I give you. So when she was done, she had a negative impression of police. Of course, if you have to look at 150 of the worst cases of cops, doctors or anybody, you're going to come away with a bad taste in your mouth about cops. So that's what was happening. Cops weren't allowed on college campuses to give the other side. They didn't want us in churches. They didn't want us in parks. And as a result, there was a lot of damage done. But right now I see, because now people realize that there's a need for us, they're trying, but still we have our far progressive activists who are still in the way, who are still trying to create that divide and that chasm. And until that changes and our political leaders wake up and realize that they've been had, this is still going to be an issue. We're still going to have a problem recruiting. We're still going to have a problem, when we're just doing a simple, doing our job lawfully, having people run up with cameras and filming us and taunting us, when the suspect we're dealing with needs to hear one voice for the safest outcome. Now he's listening to 20 people filming and saying, don't kill him, officer. And next thing you know, it escalates. So there's so much repair that needs to be done. We can't fix BLM and Antifa and those guys. We can't. They have their mantra. They have their orders. They understand their mission. But what needs to happen is our politicians have to wake up and stop pitting us against each other for power. And if we can do that, we can survive.
I agree, Deion. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Deion Joseph.
Unafraid to tell it like it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, ladies, welcome back to the Off-State Show. In the spirit of National First Responders Day, I have an incredible guest. And the reason I have to reintroduce this, some of y'all are listening, but some people just jump in halfway through the show, and I want you to understand why we are interviewing, I would say, one of the most incredible, outspoken, active police officers on duty right now is Deion Joseph. Y'all, welcome back, Deion Joseph, to the show. Deion, welcome back.
Hey, good to be back, brother.
All right, so I want to continue this conversation. You know, we spoke about how the disconnect and how the media has been such a detriment in the relationship between law enforcement and the community, and then also police officers being demoralized. You know, I say dehumanized, demoralized, defunded. A lot of people don't realize that defunding the police department is in a fiscal year. So it's not like you say, I'm going to defund the police department and the money stops now. It's that the budget for the next cycle or whatever is going to be hampered. But what happens is that when you start to spew that rhetoric, police officers instantaneously feel disrespected and feel like that the leaders do not have their backs. And I want to say this. I want you to give us a check of the temperature of the morale on the police department and from police officers that you've heard from. And also, do you think this is an ebb and flow? Do you think that this is, you know, kind of a downturn and it's going to recover? Or do you think that this could be inevitably probably the worst hit to law enforcement ever happening?
Well, this is the worst hit to law enforcement I've ever seen. We've survived things where I worked. I mean, we've all survived the Rodney King incident. We survived the Rampart scandal and other things across this country because deep in the back of people's minds, they knew they needed us. But once again, the indoctrination from the progressive side is so strong when they have hold of every facet of the media, every facet of every news agency, every newspaper, every social media tech giant has control. We are now responding from a deficit that it's going to be difficult. So if it is an ebb, if it is a low, it's going to be a very, very long one, and it's going to do a whole lot of damage, even if the pendulum swings back to refunding and things of that nature. Even if we get some of the resources back, we're still going to have trouble recruiting individuals to do this noble profession called policing and finding out like I did. See, the only difference between me and my fellow members of the African-American community is I was brave enough to see the other side. I was brave enough to see it for myself. And when I was able to save lives, I got high. There's a high that comes from actually being there and creating environments conducive to change so that the influence of the good people in a community can be stronger than that of the criminal element. That's our job as law enforcement, all doing it while under the confines of the Constitution and doing it the right way. But yes, when, you know, Adolf Hitler said this. He said, if you tell a lie once, no one's going to believe you. If you tell a lie 1,000 times, everybody's going to believe you. And like I said, every movement needs a villain. Hitler sadly needed the Jews and ended up murdering 6 million Jews and 10 million others. He slaughtered them because he was able to tap into the emotions of men. Because you have to understand, it's easier to hate somebody or to guide people to hate than it is to love. If you want to know how difficult it is to get people to love and understand each other, let's ask Dr. Martin Luther King. Oh, we can't. Somebody shot him. Okay? So it's very difficult to get people to sit down and have a conversation, especially now that it's been so poisoned as far as how police are perceived. But it's going to be a long ebb, but I think it's going to come back. I think it's going to come back. It's going to take longer than usual. But I hope by that time there won't be so much damage done that we can't even get cops to police the streets and leave the people that we care about, the people we serve, vulnerable in the meantime. And it's really sad how many people have died, how many children didn't come home because of this anti-police rhetoric that our politicians and that our activists have bought into. It's really sad how many people are dying out there. If people only knew the temperature out there and how many people were dying, it would give them pause as to espousing this type of rhetoric that's killing everybody, not just cops, but killing everybody.
Wow, Dion, that's amazing. I mean, you know, I often get frustrated and I get asked this question every time I go to speak somewhere. And they say, you know, it'll be a young man that stands up in the audience or his mother stands up in the audience and say, well, my son wants to be a police officer. Or he say, I was wanting to be a police officer. I went to school for criminal justice. And should I become a police officer? And my response is always, if God has called you to be a police officer, then you go for it, because it's a calling. It's not a job. Because if you're looking for a job, this ain't the one for you. You know, they don't pay that well, and you literally risking your life every day, and you could literally be killed by a thug that's been arrested 4,500 times, and he's never going to do real time, you know, and it could be a shame. So it has to be a calling. But I want to talk about your book, Dion, because you wrote a book called Stepping Across the Line, A Skid Row Cop's Story, Volume 1. Is there a Volume 2 or in the works, or do you have both out, or are you just, yes, this is the first one?
Volume 2 I'm going to have to finish when I retire so I don't get fired.
That's
controversial and political. But no, I wrote this book because, for several reasons. I wanted to humanize police officers. I wanted to humanize the homeless. And I really wanted people to understand both sides of the issue and a young black man's journey in becoming a police officer. I was hoping that some young person of color would pick up my book and read it and say, okay, I've heard all the bad. Let me see what this brother went through. And maybe it would inspire them to go. Because really, as one training officer told me, and my uncle, he said, policing is what you make it. Okay, if you go out and become corrupt, it's because you were corrupt before you got there. Okay, mm-hmm. But if you want to go out there and police with your heart, I have a mantra that I live by every day. I said, my badge, my gun, and my baton, these things will never be the means I utilize to invoke positive change, though I am wearing them for my protection. But my heart, my faith, my love for mankind will always be my unyielding dogs of war. And that's what I've led with. And I want people to see that I'm not just some robot let out of a box to go engage in systemic racism. That's not true. That's the picture being painted. I am a young, proud African-American male who was told the same things you were told, but then I saw the other side and found my calling, and I did more to help people. I've saved more black lives or lives of anybody than any of our detractors did. You can do that if you just are brave enough to go out there and put on a badge and make that. The bravest officers on the planet to me are officers of color, because we all get it. Hispanic officers get it. I heard they're getting called coconuts and everything else like that. You know, we get called, you know the names we get called. But the bravest ones are the officers of color who go out there and say, I'm going to go out there and put my life on the line and help people, no matter what they say. And if you do that good enough, you start making change. I was able to change people's perceptions about cops, and hopefully I'll get the chance to do that on a broader level if college campuses open their minds up again, if politicians open their minds up again and let us talk. Yeah. You might hear something that will surprise you.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, you listen to Dion Joseph.
Common sense in an uncommon way. Act like you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, ladies, welcome back to the Officer Tatum Show. I've been enjoying this entire hour being able to talk to my buddy, Dion Joseph. What an incredible man. I mean, when I say articulate, you know, it's funny because if he was a white man and I said he was articulate, nobody would even think about it. But since he's black, some people are like, oh, you said he's articulate. What does that mean? That mean black people aren't articulate? It's just no. It means that there's some people that are articulate and some people that just cannot articulate what's in their mind and the concepts in which they see and project it. And I think Deion Joseph does an incredible job. I want to welcome Deion back. Ladies and gentlemen, he's a law enforcement consultant, speaker, and active police officer serving the Skid Row community in Los Angeles. Wrote a book, and we're talking about the book right now, and I haven't finished the conversation about the book. Deion, this is my last segment. I only got about 2 minutes. Can you finish the conversation about your book? And then I want you to tell the audience, how can they support you by buying your book, reading your book, and buying it and spreading it to somebody else?
Well, you know, the book, once again, it's just a journey of a young African-American. Now, it's not just for African-American people. I want everybody to read this because you'll be able to see how I found my calling through police work, and maybe it inspires somebody to do it. And also get to understand the real issues of homelessness from a non-political perspective. We need to understand how the system is failing the mentally ill, how the system is failing public safety, how the system is failing drug addicts, and how now that we've taken a hands-off approach, that it's making it worse and not better. And you'll see that through my eyes, through my walk. See, there are some people who study about these issues from a 30,000-foot view, and most of that is a bunch of bull crap that they read. But you're talking to somebody for 25 years, has been 10 toes down, trying to help change the lives of people and understanding where the system is failing. And Volume 1 will help you see that journey. So, of course, you can get my book on my website, www.deionjoseph.org. But I'd rather have me come talk to you in person. I love speaking on college campuses, speaking to law enforcement agencies, talking to church groups to motivate them and educate at the same time. So you can go to my website and do that. But we need to have that conversation again. If we don't have that dialogue, we'll never swing this pendulum back the way it needs to be swung. Let's sit down. Let's talk. Put down our politics. No more left and right. Let's be human towards each other. And you might find out something special about police officers if you just give us a chance to talk.
I love that, Deion. Deion Joseph, ladies and gentlemen. Deion, thank you so much for coming on, man. You've been a tremendous blessing. I really want to put this on my YouTube channel so people can watch this entire interview and every platform that I have, because I think it's invaluable to hear, because they hear from me all the time and I'm always yelling and I'm more hyperbolic. But I believe it's good to hear from other police officers to get the perspective of being a police officer and the genuineness and connection of humanity of law enforcement officers. But I appreciate you, Deion. I can't say enough about you, brother. I want to have you back if you're willing to come back.
Definitely, I'll be back, brother. I respect you, and thanks for putting your voice out there, man. It really means a lot. Hopefully, I can be another voice, amplified voice, to help swing this pendulum back to sanity.
100%. All right, Deion. See you later, brother. Thank you for coming on the show.
God bless.
As you enjoy Thanksgiving weekend with your family and friends, please remember my annual campaign for Prison Fellowship's Angel Tree. For just $25, you can bless a child who has a mom or a dad in prison with a personalized Christmas gift and the gospel. Or $125 will bless 5 kids who should not have to suffer because of their parents' misdeeds. Please go to theofficertatum.com, click on the Angel Tree banner, and be as generous as you can. Thank you. And again, happy Thanksgiving weekend. You are listening to the best of the Officer Tatum Show.
This is the Officer Tatum Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Officer Tatum Show. I got so much to talk about today. I want to hit on a few pointers when it comes to Ron DeSantis, Governor Abbott, sending illegal aliens to Martha's Vineyard and some of these liberal, self-proclaimed sanctuary states. Now, if you've been watching the news or paying attention at all, you will realize that there were illegal aliens who were sent to Martha's Vineyard. Now, if you don't know what Martha's Vineyard is, just imagine the place where all the wealthy people have their guest houses and or vacation homes, and Obama lived there. I'm sure Oprah Winfrey got a house there. All of these mega millionaires and billionaires have property at Martha's Vineyard. It's, I would argue that it's an exclusive location where only wealthy people reside. Now, I'm not going to lie and say I don't know people that live in Martha's Vineyard. I at least know one person that has a house in Martha's Vineyard that they don't even live at it most of the time. So you can imagine that they're a billionaire. However, the ploy by DeSantis and Governor Abbott sending some of these illegal aliens to multiple locations, I think, is petty, but I'm here for the pettiness. The only way that these people are going to get a taste of their own medicine is when we start being just as petty as they're being. I find it quite interesting that they cry from the mountaintop, we need to have immigrants. Republicans are racist. They don't care about people. These people are just looking for opportunities. And then when the opportunities are presented to be provided for by them, now it's a crisis. People in Martha's Vineyard net worth, you probably have to at least be worth several million dollars to even have a place in Martha's Vineyard. Remember all the stuff people are talking? Oh, let them in the border. Now let them stay at your vacation home. Your 15,000 square foot vacation home that you only visit for 3 months out of the year. How about you let the illegal aliens stay there? Remember when you were talking all that trash about President Donald Trump saying he's a racist for not wanting these people to come over here? Oh, now it's in your backyard. Now you are concerned. See, because I think it's not fair that the ones who are advocating for open borders the most are not affected the most by open border policy. If you look at it, you say, how many of those illegal aliens coming through Texas, coming through California, coming through Arizona? Many of them ended up in Florida. What are the chances that they're going to make it up to Chicago? What are the chances that they're going to make it up to Northern California? Some of these places, they're going to settle in a place that's closest and most conducive for them to settle in. And you know who's going to take the burden of those issues? The taxpayer. Where do you think these people go to school? When they bring their kids over here, where do you think they go to school? They ain't homeschooling them. They're going to school with your kids. And then when the teachers aren't getting paid enough and they're burdened to the bone, why do you think that's the case? Because we got an influx of people in our country that don't belong here. And we really don't have the resources to take care of them. Now, you think they're not bumping and grinding and pumping and sweating? They having kids, too. And they having a lot of kids. You think they weren't contraceptive? You think they, let me not say that other word. You think they doing the Afghanistan like Joe Biden? Yeah, they probably are. Because they're, and let me not say that. Let me not say it. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Their removal game is on trash mode. So I bet you $1 million they're having a lot of kids. And where do you think they go when they're giving birth to children? They go to the hospital. And your insurance, or if you don't have insurance, you paid out of pocket for the birth of your child and your second child and your third child. On their seventh kid, who do you think is paying for it? They don't have a job. Many of them, they don't have jobs. They don't have a Social Security number. They can't work anywhere. A lot of them are working under the table. They don't have insurance. But that pregnancy, that high-risk pregnancy, is $40,000, $50,000. Who is paying for it? Okay. I'm just wondering, were you paying attention? Are you awake? And I'm not saying in any form or fashion that we should be mean to people and we should hate people. How dare you want to be in America? I understand why you want to be in America. However, we can't just let everybody come into America. We can't just let everybody do it. Let me just give you an example. And I gave this example at a university that I was speaking at. And I said, you pay your tuition, right? Yeah, man. It's very expensive. I pay my tuition. How much do you pay for your books? Oh, it's very expensive, isn't it? You work hard to get to this point, right? In high school, you made good grades so you can qualify to come to this university. You work on the weekends. You work in part-time so you can help pay for your tuition and pay for your schooling, right? Now, just imagine if a kid just walked into the school and sat in your lecture class. And he just got a free education. Just because he walked in here, he sat down and he got an education just like you did. But you paid for it and he got it for free. How would you feel about that? How does that make you feel? There is not one person on planet Earth to be like, yeah, he has a less fortunate life. So, yeah, he can come here and his $30,000 tuition or $30,000 a year I'm paying for this university, he can come and get it for free just because he showed up, just because he ended up making it through this class. And just say five or six people come through and they all get a quality education while you paying for it and you slaving and you in debt, they get it for free. And they ain't done nothing but sneak in the classroom. And once they're in, the teacher don't put them out. The teacher says, okay, you're here now. I guess I could teach you as well. And let's say 15 people show up to your class. And out of 15 of them, 10 of them go to the study hours. And then you can't get in the study hours because all 15 of them you have to share time with them. Now, how does that make you feel? They getting teacher study hours, and they getting an education like you are, and they ain't paid for jack crap. You think that makes sense to you? You must be smoking crack. And it doesn't make sense to the liberals. It only makes sense when it doesn't apply to them. Let me give you another example. Y'all remember when everybody put black squares? If you're not on social media, let me just explain this to you. During Black Lives Matter movement, when they were burning down the country, people were virtue signaling. So instead of putting a regular picture, they put a black picture up. They call it a black square. And under the square, they can virtue signal as hard as they want to virtue signal. I love black people. I'm here to support you if you need me. They posted that bull crap one time. I ain't seen a black square in 3 years, 2 years. I ain't seen a single black. All them people that were posting black squares talking about they love black people, they haven't posted a black man on their page since then. That's the only thing black on their page was this black square. They don't support black businesses. They don't have any black friends. They have never posted a black square again. Virtue signaling. And it's easy to virtue signal, but it's hard to apply. When I say apply the principles in which you are espousing. I just want people to be aware of that. I don't need to hold too much of your time. But there's hundreds of immigrants who are coming over, and I believe in our stack we have some audio of some of the immigrants being interviewed. And the liberals are out here saying, and they're saying that, oh, the border's secured. I want you to listen. I think it's clip 8. I want you to listen to clip 8 of an immigrant telling you how secure the border is. Roll the clip.
Contact in New York. Do you have someone to contact?
Yes, I have someone to contact. My family here.
Okay. And lastly, do you believe that President Biden has made it possible for you to come here? And what would you like to say to President Biden?
My gratitude to the president and all the members of the government. That's all.
Okay. Thank you, Vazir. Thank you. That's the situation out here right now.
I think we got another clip 9. Let's play clip 9 as well.
The White House just now not only calling these political stunts and the migrants being used as political pawns, calling it shameful, saying that we're working to manage the consequences of this. And then she said, quote, the migrants were misled on where they were going, calling it alarming. You say that's not the case.
It's not the case for the buses here in Texas. Every single one of those migrants, before they get on a bus, they have to sign a voluntary consent waiver. I have seen those waivers. They get two options. They can decide to go to New York City or they can go to Washington, D.C. They get to pick which bus they go on. They're loaded with food. They're loaded with water, MREs. They get to stop and get off wherever they want to. They are not forced onto these buses. The migrants themselves have said they are not forced on. They go willingly. Some are very excited to do it because they're trying to reunite with family on the East Coast. There's a local NGO out here, Mission Border Hope. They're executive director said the exact same thing. Nobody is forced onto the buses. They all go willingly, and nobody is deceived. They all sign
and
paperwork,
ladies,
guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, there you go. The Democrats aligned because they wanted the virtue signal. They didn't want the reality to come to their doorstep. If they really cared about illegal aliens, they would welcome them with open arms. Hold the phone. You listen to the Deion Statham Show. I'll be back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Officer Tatum Show. My Pillow is having the biggest sheet sale of the year. We all know what happened to Mike Lindell yesterday. And this is an opportunity to support Mike Lindell, to support My Pillow, and also to get the best sheet set that you're going to ever buy for an incredible price. You can't beat the prices. So as you know, My Pillow is having the biggest sheet sale of the year. And the feature seat set is the Percale bed sheet set. And it's available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they are all on sale. Let me give you an example. The queen size is regularly priced at $89.98, but it's now only $39.98 with our promo code. Make sure you order now because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percale bed sheets set or bed sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. There's a limited supply, so make sure you order now. Call 1-800-976-8379. Use promo code Brandon or go to MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square. Put in promo code Brandon. This offer will not last long, so order now. Brandon at MyPillow.com. Speaking of the illegal aliens, I want to be very clear about this. I think it is our job, our duty as Americans, as Christians, to supply needs to the needy and the people who do not have what we have. However, there's a thing called strategy, and there's a thing called I really care about these people versus the virtue signaling and the political agenda. Let's walk through this. Encouraging people to just come over here willy-nilly, it's not like they're walking the well-worn path. They're getting escorted over here by coyotes that are run by the cartel. People are paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to get people over here, hundreds of thousands of pesos to get people over here. And while they're en route, the young women are getting raped. They got little kids pregnant. They're getting raped on the way over here. What do y'all thought was happening? People are sick in their mind in America working corporate jobs, looking at child pornography. These people are in the middle of the desert. They're raping these kids and they're raping the women. And do you think every kid that comes from Mexico or from around the country that comes through the southern border, do you think they actually make it here? Are you deceived? Do you think people aren't sex trafficking these kids and these women that come over here? Who's keeping track? Who has geo-tracking on women that come over here from through the southern border? Many of them are used as sex slaves, in sex trafficking, human trafficking. But when we encourage them to come here the way they are, we're encouraging them to get kidnapped. We're encouraging them to get raped. We're encouraging them to get abused. I don't understand how we don't see this at this point. I know for a fact, one of my friends on the Border Patrol, they don't care about you. If you can't keep up, they leave you behind to die. My friend that worked for the Border Patrol, he was telling me that he used to see skeletal remains of women, mostly women and children, out in the desert all the time. And people who are smuggling drugs all the time. He would tell me how he would see skeletal remains of a woman and a baby in her stomach. They don't care about you. It is a treacherous trick to the United States of America. If we really cared about these people, we would end the way that they come over here. And we will fix our immigration system. If our immigration system cannot hold that many people, we cannot allow that many people over in our country. If our immigration system can allow for millions and millions of people to be in America, we should structure it to where people can come over here and live a peaceful life and have access to the things that Americans have access to. There's no reason to let these people over here and they don't have any access to anything. They're literally working under the table. They literally are getting abused, raped, manipulated. And who are they going to call? The Ghostbusters? They can't call the police. You call the police, you get deported. They are afraid. They can't speak English. Many of them cannot speak English. Some of them can. Many of them cannot. How do they communicate with police officers? You say somebody raped me. We can't talk to you. We're going to have to find a Spanish interpreter. And I'll tell you right now, Arizona is probably prevalent with those, but it ain't a lot. I remember I went to a scene, a woman had got beat up or something, and I couldn't talk to her. I ain't know what she said. All I know is policio. I ain't know what she said. I had to wait crucial minutes to find, you know, to get an interpreter there while the suspect is roaming somewhere and I cannot understand what she's saying. We had a language line that we had to call. You know how much time we're wasting having to call somebody up on the phone, hoping that somebody can interpret what she's saying so I can get it out on the radio? This is what happens when you have immigration like this. We need to have these people come and assimilate into the United States of America. Many of them who aren't terrorists, because we know it's a lot of terrorists. They're catching terrorists all the time. People on the terrorist watch list coming right through our border. People that aren't terrorists, people that aren't manipulating the system to come over into our country, they are coming here, and we can give them access to be hard workers and build the American dream instead of having them come under the radar. Now, okay, I'm just going to be honest with you. There's a lot of people that make a lot of money that take advantage of these people, whether good or not good, right? If somebody can come out and build you a shed in your backyard and you pay them $100, and if they get hurt and nobody knows because they ain't finna sue you, you'll pay $100, let a person build your shed back in the backyard. They'll cut your whole grass, $200, shed and yard. Or you go through a service that you got to pay taxes, that you got to pay these Americans $80 an hour. Your shed costs $1,200. I mean, I'm telling you, you create an environment in which you class out American jobs. Nobody's going to pay these prices when you have illegal aliens come over here and they can do it for half the price and work twice as long. In the state of California, they got all these labor laws that you got to have a break, you have a lunch, or if you're working under the table, you don't need a break. If you putting up houses and you ain't working for no legitimate company, you don't need no break. You make five times the houses as somebody else if you ain't taking breaks and being like these lazy Americans. You think they ain't out there doing it? You crazy. I'm telling you, I see nothing but Hispanic people up and down my street with doing lawn care. And now I rent my house and people come over here and do our yard because the owner, he has to fund that. They, you know, one guy know English. The rest of them can't speak English. Had a guy come down the street. We got some palm trees in our front yard. A guy comes down the street. He can't speak English. His kids are talking to me for him. Now, do you think I'm going to give that man an opportunity? I guarantee you, I will. One of the guys jumped from one tree to the other tree. He jumped from a palm tree to a palm tree. I thought we was in Moana or something. That dude jumped from the tree. My wife saw him swing and jump from the tree. $100 or something he did them trees. So I think that we should not have situations where we're creating conducive environments for people to not get paid and to defraud the government of tax money because we know they're not paying taxes. Ladies and gentlemen, I got more to talk about. I want to Jean Pierre and all these other Kamala Harris clowns. We'll talk about it in the next segment.
This is the Officer Tatum Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Officer Tatum Show. I'm your host, Brandon Tatum. Follow me on social media at The Officer Tatum. Go to the website, TheOfficerTatum.com. I want to tell you about Uncle Tom 2, the movie. If you haven't seen the movie yet, haven't heard about the movie, you are missing out on facts. You are missing out on arguments in which you know in your heart that are true, but you've never seen it explained before. You want to know the history, the true history of Americans of African descent in this country? Do you want to know the true history of the fall of Black Harlem? The true history of Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma? The rise and fall and the rebuilding of Black Wall Street? Do you want to know how black people went from prospering, loving this country, appreciating accountability and building wealth to, in some cases, being victims, hating America, and believing that the government is God? If you want to know the truth, you need to see Uncle Tom 2, the movie. How do you get Uncle Tom 2, the movie, Brandon? Where do I find it at? Go to SalemNow.com. It's very simple. Go to SalemNow.com. You can download the movie on demand, or you can get it on DVD. Download it on demand or get it on DVD. SalemNow.com, Uncle Tom 2, the movie you don't want to miss. Texas has sent over 9,000 immigrants to these leftist cities. Kamala Harris claims, she declares, that we have a secure border. And she has to be the most out-of-touch person on planet Earth. I'm going to play the clip of her, and then I'm going to show you just 3 days of Border Patrol activity. And I'm going to show you what they've gotten in 3 days of Border Patrol activity. And you tell me, is what Kamala Harris said true, or is it false? Roll clip two.
We have a secure border, in that is a priority for any nation, including ours and our administration. But there are still a lot of problems that we are trying to fix, given the deterioration that happened over the last 4 years. We also have to put in place a law and a plan for a pathway for citizenship for the millions of people who are here and are prepared to do what is legally required to gain citizenship. We don't have that in place because people are playing politics.
I want to call you a word that the Lord would be upset with me for calling you. These people are crooked. When Barack Obama was in office, do y'all remember the DACA program? Why did he not make that more official? Why did he not give them a pathway to citizenship when he created the DACA program? No, the Democrats have had the House and Senate. Pretty much they've had the Senate. Why haven't they given DACA recipients the avenue to obtain citizenship in the United States of America? They don't want them to. They want to keep saying that they will so you can keep voting for them, so they keep promising you stuff they never deliver on. If they were to give them citizenship now, then what? They'll find out that the Republicans are the party of choice. But until then, the Democrats keep pitching a lie. She said the border was secure. That's what she said. She acts as if the border is fine. We just have a little things to tweak to make things better. You a lying piece of you know what. Let me read this article. It says Border Patrol caught 10 illegal immigrant sex offenders in 3 days. It says last week the Border Patrol chief said that agents at the U.S.-Mexico border caught 10 illegal immigrant sex offenders in 3 days. Border Patrol Chief Raul Ortiz shared the statistics on Twitter. He shared that 10 sex offenders, 4 gang members, and 100 pills of fentanyl were caught at the border. In addition, Border Patrol agents rescued 91 people. Let me give you a 3-day recap. 71 pounds of meth. 71 pounds of meth. That's the size of your kid. 100 pills of fentanyl. And I know people may not understand how potent fentanyl is. If you touch fentanyl, you can die. It can seep into your pores and kill you. If you inhale the aroma or whatever substance from fentanyl, you will die. And obviously, if you ingest fentanyl, you will die. 100 pills of fentanyl, 2,600 migrants, 10 large groups. That's 2,600 in 3 days. 10 sex offenders, 4 gang members, 1 murderer, 1 injured child, and they rescued 91 people in 3 days. 3 days. This is how long Jesus was in the grave. 3 days, and they were able to catch all of that. Imagine. I wish somebody can do some math for me. If they rescued 91 people in 3 days, let's go with 30 days. I think you add a zero on it. That'd be 910 people in 30 days. If you put a zero on a fentanyl, that's 710 pounds of fentanyl. That's 1,000 pills of fentanyl. That'll be 700 pounds of meth, 1,000 pounds of fentanyl. 1,000 pills of fentanyl. And I can go on and on and on. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Officer Tatum Show. I want to tell you guys about the Battleground Talkers Tour of 2022. The battle lines are drawn. The war for America's soul is on the line. Learn who is on the right side of history. Join me and Salem Media Group for the Battleground Talkers Tour this October as the best minds in conservative media and thought dissect the coming midterm election. This is going to be an incredible event. I cannot wait to see you. I hope that all of y'all listening get yourself some tickets. All you have to do to find out if we're going to be in your city and the dates that we're going to be in your city, if we are, you go to battlegroundtour.com. That's battlegroundtour.com. And also while you're there, get yourself some tickets. And if somehow we're in a city that you can't make it to, tell your mom and them to meet us there in that city. Battlegroundtour.com. That's battlegroundtour.com for you to get your tickets today. I cannot wait to see you there. Got some more clips to play because I don't want y'all to think that Brandon Tatum is making this stuff up out the side of his head. I really, really, really have these clips of these idiotic politicians saying all kind of ridiculous stuff and trying to pass it off as being legitimate. Now, I want you to hear Jean Pierre say what she has to say, which is the press secretary, say what she has to say about the border. Roll clip 5.
The busing aside, how do you explain this influx?
Well, again, we understand that we have work to do. We understand that, and we have been doing the work to do that. We have taken unprecedented action over the past year and a half to secure our border and rebuild a safer and orderly process system.
Uh-huh. Go to clip, I think it's clip four. No, clip four, do six.
Also, the fact that that Fox News and not the Department of Homeland Security, the city, or local NGOs were alerted about a plan to leave migrants, including children, on the side of a busy D.C. street makes clear that this is just a cruel, premeditated political stunt. This is what they are doing. And a couple more things. The migrants, including children, who arrived in Martha's Vineyard were misled about where they were being taken and what would be provided when they arrived is also deeply alarming. The children Governor Abbott abandoned in Martha's Vineyard, the children that Governor DeSantis abandoned as well, deserve better. They deserve better than being left on the streets of D.C.,
Lady, shut the front door. I'm done listening. I'm done listening to this hack. Listen. This is what I have to say. How are they abandoned in Martha's Vineyard? What do you mean abandoned? They should be welcomed with open arms. Their stomachs should be fat with all that food they could eat at Martha's Vineyard. You know the net worth of a square foot of Martha's Vineyard? They didn't get abandoned. You took them to paradise. How you get abandoned in paradise? Oh, unless nobody want to deal with you in real life. Then she says that they were misled. We already heard the news say, which was confirmed, that they weren't misled. They had a choice which city they want to go to. They knew exactly where they were going. They signed a waiver to acknowledge that they knew what was going on. So right from the White House, they just lie. And they just get out there and lie with no repercussions. I want to hear DeSantis make a statement about this. Go with clip three.
We've worked on innovative ways to be able to protect the state of Florida from the impact of Biden's border policies. And so that's involved a number of things. We've had different operations in the Panhandle where we've stopped human smugglers. There have been criminal charges brought. There have been drugs seized. There have been a whole bunch of things. But yes, if you have folks that are inclined to think Florida is a good place, our message to them is we are not a sanctuary state. And it's better to be able to go to a sanctuary jurisdiction. And yes, we will help facilitate that transport for you to be able to go to greener pastures.
What are we going to say? Hold on. I want us to dissect this real quick. You know that California and Chicago, I think even D.C., decide to label themselves as sanctuary states, sanctuary territories, sanctuary cities within those states. I think Chicago is a sanctuary city. If you're a sanctuary city, then why are you mad when they send illegal aliens to your sanctuary city? You know, it's funny. It's like I'm sitting in my house and I'm saying, you know what? I'm for pro-abortion. And any woman who has an abortion can come stay at our house. And I know I live off the grid somewhere. And then when somebody drop them off in front of my house, I'm saying, this is terrible. How dare they abandon these people in front of my house? You know, you said that you wanted them. You said that you would take care of them. You said that what would Jesus do? Jesus would take in these. Jesus was an immigrant. All of these things that you guys are saying. And when it comes to fruition, y'all backing off the throttle. It's funny to me. I wish that, like, I know that a bunch of conservatives are listening to me already, and I'm talking in a circle. I know that I'm saying the things that you want to speak out to the world, but I wish that liberals were listening to this. Do you understand the logic that you're putting out into the atmosphere? You guys are saying that you love these kids, and then you're saying that it's inhumane to abandon them in the richest part of... Listen to this. If I took some black kids from the hood, from the ghetto, from the slums, and I took them and dropped them off in front of Barack Obama's house, am I abandoning them? Explain that to me. If I take some kids from South Central and I go drop them off in front of Kamala Harris like they did with some of these illegal aliens, am I abandoning them? Is it cruel and unusual?
And then another thing they say is that they didn't give us notification. Well, Texas don't have notification when people are breaking into the country. They don't get notifications. People just show up. They don't get notifications when illegal immigrants are getting on buses on their own dime. Or somebody's paying for them to put them on buses for them to travel to other states. They don't get an opportunity to just to have all of everything prepared and ready. Y'all said there was no crisis, so when they come, you should be ready and prepared to take care of them. I thought y'all cared. But ladies and gentlemen, they don't care. It's all a facade and what we call a virtue signal. And I want every single person to understand that, internalize that. These people would not be mad if they really had it in them to support these men and women and these children. But they don't care.
This is the Officer Tatum Show. Common sense in an uncommon way. Act like you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen and ladies, welcome back to the Officer Tatum Show. I just had to spend an hour to talk about this immigration issue because it's really plaguing our country. Some people don't want to acknowledge it. Some people think that there's other things that are important. But, man, I'm telling you right now, this is a bigger deal than they're trying to make it out to be. And if we are not knowledgeable about it, we're gonna be in trouble. Now, I want to pull up some of the calls just in case there's somebody that wanted to comment. And, of course, I can't find the page that it's on. But regardless of that, I think it's invaluable for us to have this conversation about the border. And I think we have to be transparent and understand who's on what side. You know, I'm wholehearted and in good faith believe that we should support people who want to come to this country. However, we got to do it the right way. You can't just make one example, anecdotal example, and say, look, this person came over here and they built the wealth and they did this. But what about everybody else? If we were managing and saying, hey, if you come over here and build wealth, you can stay. If you don't, you can leave. We don't do that. We let everybody over here. And I would argue if you just roll the dice and look at the population of humanity as a whole, most people ain't going to do nothing with their life. Most people are going to, soak as much as they can off of society. They're going to get involved in domestic violence. They're going to have children out of wedlock or children within wedlock more than they can take care of. That's just human nature. So if you roll the dice and you influx a bunch of people over here that are uneducated in many cases that are coming from these impoverished third world countries, you're going to get a lot of problems. And I think it's a shame that our school system is being burdened by people who cannot speak English. I dated a girl, it was a long time ago, I mean, 6-7 years ago. I dated a girl that was a school teacher. And they literally had kids in her class that could not speak English. So they had to create a whole new curriculum and class for English as second language students. I mean, what, it's unacceptable. And then so they have the burden of teachers having to be taken away from your children to deal with these children. We need to send these kids back. You and your parents need to go back where you came from. We can't let everybody in here. And I want to make this as clear as mud. You come over here illegal, you got to go home. There's plenty of people who are applying and doing it the right way. We need to reserve space for the people who are doing it the right way. They should be able to fill out the application. It should be processed as soon as possible, and they should be in this country in no time. It should be a quick, easy process. But these other people are making it harder on the people who are trying to do what's right, and that needs to change. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you guys about this nutrition nut and these liberals saying that good nutrition is racist and is part of white supremacy. You cannot make this stuff up. Hold the phone. I'll be back after the break.
This is the Officer Tatum Show. 844-900-7243. That's 844-900-7243.
What's going on, y'all? This is Brandon Tatum. I just want to thank you so much for listening to my podcast. You can always get the podcast at Salem Podcast Network or wherever you listen to your podcast.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.